Hi, this is a Life of Learning podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Right. Yeah, how do you pronounce your name again? Is it Metap? Metap. Great.
Is a soft H.
Yeah. Got it. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
It's hard on the English tongue, but it's, you just sort of like the H kind of softens the T.
So, okay, cool. Yeah. Right. Hi, Metap. Thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Hi, Reggie. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Right, Metap, let's talk about how we first met. Let's just dive right into it. I was at an art centre and I was doing a juggling and a Rubik's Cube workshop. And you were in sort of like one of the corners doing a painting, weren't you?
Yeah. So there was a art exhibition happening at the same place, and it was like a four-day event, three rather, and it was it was just kind of tucked away in the corner. It didn't really catch anybody's eye unless they knew exactly where it was, or came specifically for that event via flyers or word of mouth or something like that. And I just thought being sort of within quite close to the door, so that when people walked in and they kind of turned to the side and like looked at me and they think, oh, what's she doing? And I'll be live painting and I'll kind of point people in the direction of the gallery and the exhibition which was happening. So that's how we met, and I think you were on the way out and I was still there, and you caught me in the same manner and sort of chatted, and that's how we met, really.
I thought what you did there was amazing, and the reason why I say is because you were, I mean, if people don't know where this art centre is, it doesn't matter, but where you were sort of like, you were right at the window, weren't you, facing the street. So people that could walk past will actually see you doing, you know, sort of like the live painting. And I thought that was just amazing, because if people didn't know that there was an art, well, people wouldn't have known that there was an art
event
at the back, but they would have seen you doing something, they may have come in. So you were kind of sort of like promoting yourself as well as the the sort of like the art show. So I just thought that was really good, and what made you think of that? Because I thought that was fascinating just in itself.
Well, that's just a little bit of a entrepreneurial mindset, just kind of like, you know, if any opportunity, try to make it as, you know, as big and as sort of, well, eye-catching possibly is the right word, but also just to get people interested, because a lot of people are just curious. So, but when people are going about their day-to-day lives, they're not really thinking about, oh, look, there's somebody who's painting, because where does that ever happen? Usually people see a finished result, so they go to galleries and everything, they don't even see the artist, they literally just see the finished work. But this was an actual a person who was painting for real in a public setting. Anything could go right, anything could go wrong. Luckily everything went right, you know, there was no mishaps or boo-boos. So so I think people are just in general just quite curious, because it's something that's not of the norm of, you know, just going about their day-to-day lives. So they would often just sort of look through the glass and see what I'm doing, and I would obviously sort of call them in, kind of like, you know, don't be sort of shy, just come in. And so they'll just come in and they'll be like, you know, oh, what are you doing, kind of thing. And I'll be like, I'm painting because there is an exhibition going on, and I'll point them in the direction, because it was so tucked away that it was not the most, you know, opportunistic place to put something so attractive, you know, having all these beautiful paintings. But this was a way to push them in that direction, because otherwise they wouldn't have known. So I proposed it to the managers that were there, and they said, you know, as long as you don't make a mess and as long as you take everything with you at the end of the day, you know, you're fine to do it. So after that, I came with all my equipment. I came with my collapsible easel and relatively, to me, very small canvas. It was about 50 by 70 centimeters, which is very small. To me, it's tiny, because I usually work on like 5 foot canvases, which are like as tall as me. So it was a little bit of a challenge of having it so small, and also the pressure of being in a public setting, because I'd never done that before. And also I only had 3 days, so I had to make the most of those 3 days to I suppose promote the event and do something productive whilst I'm there, and not have good judgment about sort of like the colors that I'm using and the overall impact I wanted to make with the painting and the using the space as well, because I've you know, it's the first time I've done in that kind of acoustics as well, because the type of art that I do is synesthesia, which is when I hear music, I see colors. That's a specific type of synesthesia that I have. So everything that's going on, all of the music that they're playing in that big place, and it's all giving me sort of feedback that I'm also painting. So there was that kind of knock-on effect as well. And I think that's when also we just got chatting, because you were saying, oh, you know, why are you painting the things that you're painting? And I said, oh, well, you know, I've just explained. So the specific sort of synesthesia that I have is chromesthesia, which is the audio visual. So, you know, 99 times out of 10, it's music. That's a specific response in my mind. So every kind of like musical or audio experience lends itself to like a wash of color in my mind that I see. And that's what I try to paint. And it's very, very dynamic, and it's very colorful, and it's very, there's a lot of movement in it, which is obviously really, really difficult to capture in a static painting. But I'm trying my best. You know, that's the only other way to do it. The only other way would be video, but I don't know how to make video. So I have to ask somebody who's in the know-how to do that. But in terms of just using the resources I have, which is like the music, my mind, and my hands, and my paint, that's how I try to create sort of like the imagery in my mind and try to demonstrate it as best as I can in the best of my ability on canvas.
Okay. Yeah, it's that's what I found interesting about you, and that's the reason why I thought you'd be great to come onto the podcast, because you know your specific style of painting really resonated with me, because I've heard of the term. Is it synesthesia? Is that how you pronounce it?
Synesthesia.
I have heard someone mention it years ago, but I never explored it. And when you said it again, I go, oh yes, I know what that is. And when you said you use that in your art, I thought, wow, this is just so interesting. And for you to put yourself out there, because I think it's quite tough. Well, I don't know. Is it quite tough to sort of like put yourself out there in front of the public and do what you do? Or was it easy? Once you got into a groove, it was all right. Just explain that.
Yeah, it was a little bit daunting. At first, I really thought, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. Like in my to myself, you know, the first day when I'm like setting up my easel and everything's a little bit quiet because, you know, no one's really come into the building yet.
Yeah.
I was thinking, oh God, I don't know what I've done. Like, what have I put myself in? It was just a completely, not alien, but it was just a completely new experience that I'd never done. And I've thrown myself in at the deep end, not truly thinking of the, oh my God, how many things could go wrong. But you know what? You just adapt and you kind of get into a zone where everything's kind of zen. So, you know, you've done these, obviously you've painted images like, well, I have painted so many paintings that it becomes second nature to you. So when you pick up that paintbrush and you put all your paint on the palette and you start mixing, it's kind of like, oh, I'm in my bedroom again, you know, I'm just doing the thing that I do. And it becomes almost second nature. You don't really think about, oh, what happens if I make a wrong brush stroke or if I you know, mix up the wrong color. There's not so much of that pressure because you're creating something that is completely brand new. You're not following somebody else's rule or guide or anything. This is just, it's pure the expression that you bring and the environment around me, how that's making me, how it's reacting with me.
Yeah.
And I remember it was particularly cold. So like, I thought, you know what? I want to paint something to warm me up. Literally, like psychologically, if you're really cold, you know, think about a desert or something like that. And if you're really hot, you know, think about, you know, icebergs. So that's how I was thinking. I was like, I'm going to paint something yellow and red, like hot colors, things that are associated with like heat and stuff like that. So, you know, the first color that I put on my palette was yellow because I just thought, you know, I just want a bit of sun. It's a bit grim that day. And I thought, well, I don't want gray. I want yellow and oranges. So that's when I put them on my palette, I automatically felt warmer. Like I felt like I was ready to go. And so that was the initial sort of spark. And it was, I had that kind of feeling, oh, I'm going to kick my water, because I never had a little table or anything like that. I literally just had a chair and an easel, because I didn't have my usual environment. But I thought, you know what, I'm creative people, they adapt, you know, no matter what. So I had my jar of water on the floor, and I thought, oh, I'm going to kick this over. That's going to be my clumsiness. But I didn't do anything like that. It was a really kind of like, very fulfilling experience. And also people were just so responsive to the work. They had never seen anything, I suppose, in the way that you you received me as well. It was in the same kind of like joyous, interested, kind of like curious, oh, that's something new, I've never seen that before, you know. And children were responding to it, and older people were responding to it, and people in the middle were responding to it, and it gave gave me so much positivity that I really felt like it really gave me, it gave me food for my soul, that seeing those people's reactions. And I thought, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I didn't give, like, I'm giving myself to these people by being in this sort of in this public setting, and little pieces of myself are going onto this canvas, you know, for permanently, you know, because once the paint dries, it's pretty much there permanently. I was just going to say, like, the people that were giving me the feedback obviously had never, they don't know nothing about what I do. They don't even know who I am. I'm pretty much a ghost, you know, but they gave me such a great feedback, and it was such a good energy that I also sort of like took that on board as well, and thought, oh, you know, I'm actually doing something quite positive. So I'm just going to like carry on just doing what I'm doing, and, you know, it's going to be great. So, yeah.
How long were you there for in total, roughly?
I was there for, so the whole duration of the event. So it was 3 days.
No, in terms of the painting, sorry, you know, when you were doing the painting, oh, like, and I saw you. Yeah.
Oh, I see. So it was about 9 hours, I think. So nine hours times three. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were in that that spot in the gallery, and in the center, and you were painting. Wow. Okay.
It was literally performance art. I hardly ate, but you know, it was really funny because I didn't feel hungry. I was so in the zone that I was almost like feeding off people's energy rather, and the energy of being there and like being kind of absorbed in the moment, that I just forgot about other things. I forgot about, you know, oh, maybe I had to call my mom and just like check up on her or something like that. Mm-hmm, and I was calling up my friend to say, you know, come on, see me and all this kind of stuff. And I just forgot about all of that. And I was just doing my thing. And it was really good. I had a really sort of like fulfilling experience.
I tell you, the way you're describing it, I tell you what, it just sounds magical. It really does. And
it is like a superpower. It really is.
Yeah. No, I tell you what, I think that's brilliant. And I do a little bit about myself, not to your level, but I do a little bit about, and art is quite a solid, solitary.
Solitary, yes. Food.
So yes, for you absolutely. I mean, I've done some art, I think I might have told you, I've done some just sketches in, I'll go to Trafalgar Square and I'll just sketch, and people will just come up and talk to you. And it's just, if I was just had my headphones on and reading the book, no one would have spoken to me. But because I was just sitting there, just sketching, you know, just Trafalgar Square and stuff, people came up and spoke to me, and I had so many interesting conversations. And I think what you've done there is, I mean, that's 9 hours. That's a marathon for me. That would be unbelievable. But what you've done there, you've opened up yourself to people, and people have kind of opened up to you and actually, you know, gone up to you and actually spoken to you and you know, try to understand what you're doing. And I think you never know who you've inspired. I hope you understand that.
Oh no, I'm every day I'm humbled. I always feel like, you know, I'm a nobody, like I'm just like giving a little piece of myself to people. Like, people can take it how they will. I don't mind if people spend hours looking at my work. I don't mind if people just, you know, they just like the colors, or if they just stop and just take one look at it and then just go about their day. Like it's just I want to be I'm all of these sort of experiences, they happen so often and they are so big in my imagination that it's impossible. There is not enough time, hours in the day, and there will not be enough years in my lifetime for me to do everything that I've experienced, like put it onto canvas. So these kind of like these little snapshots and these little pieces of myself, it's like I'm just giving them away willingly, and I'm so happy to do that because I want to be really generous with this, because I understand that it's a gift, and not everyone has this kind of experience, like sensory experience. And also, you know, I never even knew myself that I had synesthesia. I didn't know the name. I knew I had it, but I didn't know that there was a name ascribed to it. And I just thought that I was, you know, you'd have that classic conversation with your friends. I said, you know, when you're about 16 years old and you're kind of more expressive and stuff like that, and you'd be like, do you hear, you know, thing, like, do you see things when you hear music, like when you hear, you know, Michael Jackson or whatever? And they will look at you really weird and they'll be like, what are you talking about? And then you kind of like, you have a little bit of a, you're taken back a little bit because you're thinking, oh no, actually this is, you know, they're going to look at me really funny now, but they're going to think I'm weird, you know? Yeah. And at that time, you kind of really close your mouth because you're like, you don't want to seem weird to your friends. But it really gave me a lot of food for thought. And I it was kind of like the penny drop kind of moment where it's like, oh, like this is only like only I'm going through this. I was like, oh no. So then you kind of keep quiet for it for a while, and it kind of goes to the back of your mind, but obviously it's impossible to ignore, but you kind of don't mention it. And then suddenly, like, all of these people, or you see a documentary on TV, or you see a random video. I mean, they never had YouTube when I was at school, but you know, you see some kind of thing on the internet and it just talks about this kind of thing, and it's like, oh yeah, that's what I have. And then it's like, yeah, it's like a eureka moment. It's like, oh my god, there is a name for it, and I'm not the only one, and I'm not mad, and I, you know, all of these things kind of coalesce, and it's like you are more understood. So that was precisely why it was good for me to have been there to show people that there is another side to this sort of expressive expressionistic art that I do. It's not just slapping on colors randomly with no thought or care. I mean, they may look like there's no structure to what I do, but there is absolutely structure, because you know, even the human body, like, we can move any way we want, but there is still a skeleton in there. It's still a vital part of anything that moves. And although I want my pictures, although they're static, I want them to have that feeling of movement in them, because that's how I see them literally in my brain. So it was just a really good way just to for people to kind of drop in on your mind, drop in on your imagination a little bit, and be like, this is like 1 millisecond of what I see in my day-to-day life. Here it is for you, you know, stranger. Here it is for you, kind of.
Yeah, because it's funny, because the painting that you were doing, or the art that you were doing, I've still got that image in my head. Got it, because you had yellows, you had oranges, you had reds, weren't they? How many did you do? Because how many paintings did you do? Because
I just did one. You were only there on I think it was Sunday, so I came a day after that as well. So it was three. So I did the same painting all 3 days, and it's still kind of a work in progress. It's really. You don't really know when a painting is finished until, well, they say you never really truly finish a painting, you abandon it.
Yeah.
That's how it's considered.
Yeah.
But whenever I look at the painting, and I just deem that everything to me is just like, you know, when you sit and you contemplate it, and everything just, you get like a sense of bliss, like everything perfect, how it is, doesn't need any more, doesn't need any less. That's when I know just to drop the paintbrush and just leave it be. But so far that didn't happen in those 3 days. So I still have a little bit more to do on it. But I mean, I say that I could shelf it for 5 months. It happens, you know, I've shelved paintings for 5 years. It happens. It's just sometimes the feeling doesn't grab you, or you get burnout and things like that. The very kind of creative problems that creative people face, those kinds of things, it happens. You know, even if you started something like, you know, 3 days ago, it still happens. You could get a burnout. I spent 27 hours on that painting. You can easily get a burnout.
I know what you're going through, because when I first started doing art, which is about 6-7 years ago, I was doing a lot of portraits and, you know, drawing of my family and stuff like that. And I was like, you think, okay, oh, I could touch up this bit, I could touch up that bit.
Yeah.
And in the end, you think, at some point, you've got to finish this thing. And I just remembered reading up about the psychology of sort of like artists and the painting and stuff like that. And I like the way you said it, you've got to abandon it. Go on.
I was just gonna say, like, you know, once everything just feels like, when, because, you know, anything that's creative is an experience, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's like the even though you're seeing a final shot of the painting, it's like there was so much experience that went into every sort of like brush, individual brushstroke of that painting. And it's you kind of sometimes you feel like you have like a, if you get a painting done in 3 hours, you think, nah, this can't be it. This mm-hmm. it can't have taken this. It can't have left me this satisfied after just 3 hours. Then no, you must, you know, it just doesn't work like that. But sometimes it just does.
Yeah.
There is no law. There's no, like, it's not really a science. It's just like, it's kind of above and beyond, like, just some sort of like an academic understanding of like when an artwork just works.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could literally just paint for 2 hours and be like, ah, that's beautiful, I'm just going to leave it like that. And if it's satisfying to the eye, if it pleases you in like in your soul, in all manner of like, you know, looking at it for X amount of time, then just leave it be. And then sometimes things can take literally 2 years. I mean, I've had paintings going for 3 or 4 years and I still haven't finished them. It's just this, it is the way it is. That is life. And it's that kind of, you have to get satisfaction also out of what you produce. You can't just, because otherwise you can tell it becomes a bit soulless, you know, just churning out stuff. And that's so indicative of like the TikTok culture and like social media. Like everyone's just wants the next hit. It's like a drug. It's like, you know, oh, such and such an artist has, you know, gone only 2 days without releasing something new, a new video or whatever. Like we must have it all. It kind of, that kind of fast-paced sort of churning out of stuff and being super duper prolific can also be like the death of your work, because it's like the soul has been ripped out of it, because you're now against the clock, and the clock it has nothing to do with creativity. The clock is literally just, the time is passing, but you feel that your audience or your the people that you're making your artwork for, if you are making it for a particular audience, hence like, you know, the TikTok culture, whatever, mm-hmm. you feel like you have to please them. And that the flip side of that is you don't please yourself. So what would you really want? Would you really want to spend 3 years or something, or maybe not 3 years, 3 months solidly on something, and it leaves you with satisfaction and also satisfies the, you know, your audience? Or would you rather spend 3 hours on something and it may satisfy a portion of your audience, but it does not leave you satisfied whatsoever? It's like, what's the point? To me, that's pointless. But for other people, that might be fulfilling, but not for me.
Yeah. No, it's funny you should mention about, you know, TikTok and the society now where we want things done really quickly. And you mentioned about, you know, a piece of art could take you 3 months. And I've had a piece of art that's, you know, it's taken me that much, and I'll come back to it and go back to it and stuff like that.
Exactly.
In terms of creativity, you know, there is no timeline. And if you're in the TikTok or, you know, the social media, and you know, because they want you to post and they keep posting and keep posting, and the art, just where the creativity and the art kind of dies then, and before you know it, it's like a treadmill and you're not really putting your good stuff out there, if that makes sense.
Exactly, because the shelf life of those types of very fast-paced media is about 6 hours.
Yeah.
And then it's forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you could post something and it will get a load of hits or whatever, and then it will kind of die off, and then it will never kind of bounce back unless you do the next video. It's not like someone keeps on coming back. They come back for the new things that you create because they just like what you do.
Yeah.
And that comes at an expense of, I guess, you know, you end up becoming a workaholic and trying to please your audience, trying to please your fan base, you know, when you get to that stage where you literally have fans. But it comes at an expense to also your well-being, your mental health, and of your art in general.
Yeah.
Because you will suffer great burnout. And I have found that as well in the past. I felt so much pressure that every week I needed to do a new piece of art. And it becomes a massive learning curve, because obviously you get rather good in that short period of time, because you feel compelled to produce that much work. But it comes at an expense of lack of creativity, artist's block, which is very common.
Yeah.
And it's not really a good headspace to be in. So I would rather do things for myself and also do things that I feel will please me, you know, 10 years, you know, 10 years in the future, and I won't cringe, stuff like that, and look back at my work and be, you know, that wasn't actually like that great. Even if there is, you know, it's part of your legacy, and you know, you shouldn't be ashamed, but you should also make sure that you just do the best that you can, and you know, get the most satisfaction out of what you do as you can. Otherwise, what's the point?
We've mentioned creativity a lot, and I just want to deep dive into that, because I'm a network engineer, and I never thought that I was creative, and
it manifests itself in so many ways. It's like, because you need creativity and problem solving.
Yes, you know? Yeah. And that's what I realized. I realized, oh, wow, I am creative. And then once I sort of like realized that, and I kind of thought that as well, because I play a lot of sport, and I use some of that, you know, that creativity in to do sort of like certain sporting activities and stuff like that.
Absolutely,
Yeah, so I think everyone is creative deep down, but I think, and I think we spoke about it, I'm not sure, but we spoke about sort of like the lack of creativity that people have got now, and there's many reasons for that, and I'm going to list four things, and then we can just deep diving into them. One thing we've already spoken about is the fast pace. No one has time to be sort of like sit back and be creative. So what's your view on that?
Yeah, so you know, there is a saying, you know, good things never come easy. So sometimes in order to be able to, you know, produce these masterpieces, you have to hard graft it. You have to, you know, you have to pull all-nighters and stuff like that. You have to you know, you have to use up a lot of resources and use up a lot of time, and then therefore use up a lot of your effort. And you know, you have people that can, you know, they work very efficiently. So, but it's not like they became efficient overnight. They became efficient because they put the hard work into it. So there's a sort of a level of you need the time to build yourself up in order to be able to create things so quickly. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people don't get given that time. They're like, no, you have to bash it out, like, you know, from the get-go. You don't have time to learn, so people give up. So that creates that potential, all of that like bottled potential has been wasted, because people don't get allocated the time to grow into what they're capable of doing. And trying to sort of like cotton on to the like the latest trends, and it's just like low effort, bottom of the barrel, kind of like zero, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a waste, because there's obviously people that are, you know, it hits a certain audience, but you get like, all of these people become a dime a dozen, or all of these things become a dime a dozen. So there's no individuality. Everyone has to, oh, that thing became popular, so therefore I'm going to emulate it. Yeah. And then you just get like pastiches of like all of these sameness. So everything becomes the same, you know, because there's a void there. And that void is filled up with everything that's popular at one time. And nothing really sticks, because no one has left their own personal mark on it. It's just been like, what's a popular trend? Oh, this, okay, I'm going to do that. And there's no individuality. It's so, it's rigid, but it's also, you just don't allow yourself to have that growth in order to be better than the person who you're trying to emulate. Because you could copy. It's like people who copy, you know, people who do like these ultra realistic, photorealistic drawings or photorealistic, paintings.
Yeah,
the art. Yes, and I'll think to myself, you know, that is technically amazing, like awesome, you know. Yeah. But then I think I could just take a photograph.
Yes.
So that was great in like Henry VIII's times, because you know they never had cameras back in the days. So the best artists were the ones that were the most photorealistic, because that was the job that you were employed by the king to do that job. But you know, there is no creativity in just doing a straight copy.
Yeah.
Because anyone could copy a picture of a lion, because they can equally take a picture of a lion. You know, you just have to go to Google Images, and you could take any one of those and just do a like for like copy. Technically, fantastic, amazing, but there is, to me, there is not much creativity in that, because there is nothing there that you haven't pushed it any envelope.
I agree. And in terms of the fast pace, just coming back to that, they said, was it ever, I'm sure you've heard the phrase, it's overnight success took years.
Yes, exactly.
So I agree. I mean, I agree with you.
People wonder why, when you do these things that are, I think there was a little bit of a delay there, but I was going to say, people think that by having that sort of, sometimes it's luck. Honestly, sometimes it's you're the right place at the right time. All of the sort of the universe sort of lined its planets up for that moment. But that's very, very, very rare.
Mm.
But it does take hard graft. Like these people who are able to churn out stuff in a matter of days, it's because it took 10 years to get to get to that level. Some you might think, oh, this this painting took me 2 weeks to do it. 10 years ago it would have taken me 2 years to do, but that's like going back to what we were saying, that that because everything is so fast paced, you don't have that time to progress and grow. That's precisely the reason I feel like I was born maybe at the best time, because I was sort of too old for TikTok, but I was also too young for that. I was too young for that kind of being fed that, oh, if you don't have instant success, you're a failure.
We
were allowed to grow, we were allowed to have those kind of ingredients that made us individual and who we are, and to make things that were okay. We could be influenced by all of these musicians and artists and filmmakers and whatever, and influenced by all of these sort of cultural things. But when it came down to it, our souls shone out because we were allowed to have that style come out of us, and not have to be have a stamp on you that said, oh, that's just a video X person on YouTube. I was just gonna say, you just have to have been given that chance and just not sort of have it swatted away. If you don't have instant success, you can't be anything.
And I think with that as well, putting the hard graft in, and that you mentioned growth, the fear of failure, I think that's something that people now, on TikTok, and I don't want to keep saying TikTok, but social media and just the society that we live in, we don't show our failures, and we don't see the hard work and some of the paintings that you've done, or some of the things that I've done, we tend not to show those. We don't show that growth, and people probably should see that more, because then they'll see, oh, you spent a lot of time and you failed a lot in order to get to where you are.
I agree. And funnily that you should say that, because the actual canvas that I was working on the actual canvas that was I was working on was actually a painting that I had painted over white. It was I'd already started it and I just didn't like it. I hated it. And I thought, well, I don't want to, I'm a bit frugal as well. I don't want to waste this canvas. So I just painted over with white and I started. And no one would have known, but maybe people who were there right from the get-go, before I put anything on the canvas. It's true. You scrap a lot, and sometimes things just don't work. So you have to, and sometimes you shelf things, and then you come back to anything. Oh yeah, when I've got fresh ideas, I'll come back to you. Sometimes the fresh ideas never come, and you just kind of feel, hey, you know what, the vibe is off on this painting. I'm just going to cut my losses and just literally make the thing white and then go back to the beginning. Sometimes you have to do that. You have to destroy some things in order for that creativity to flourish. You have to. This isn't necessary. And it shouldn't be frowned upon. And you should be able to scrap things. You should be able to sort of take things apart as many times as because I don't just do art. I'm primarily a composer. So, the music, there's so many pieces that, you start and you're thinking, oh, this doesn't go anywhere. But then you think, hang on a minute, let's just split this up, because I can take motifs and elements and I could put them in different pieces. And sometimes it's like you would have a scrapbook of a potential piece that you started, and that you might really like this piano line, this little motif or whatever. It's only about 4 bars long. It's very, very insignificant, but it becomes the initial element of another piece, because it was in the right E and it had the right flow about it. And you're like, yep, that's that's the one. So you just take that motif and it becomes, you know, like a tree branch. Everything just grows off of it. So it's, that's what you have to do sometimes. It's the mistakes will can become like five new pieces because you have allowed yourself to make those mistakes and know what doesn't work. And then that will then, you plant a seed. You're like, ah, you know, that you learn kind of like that didn't work, but maybe if I did this or if I change this, then it will be better. So then the next time you go into it, you'll be like, it will just come to you. It's just like you snap your finger and it's like, ah, that's what was missing the first time. And then it just goes from there.
I tell you what, I'm smiling. You can't see me, but I'm smiling because your mind is exactly like how my mind goes. You use sort of like failure and mistakes. It's that I'll use failure and mistakes as a learning point, you know, as a learning experience. Because there's not, and there's two ways of looking at it. You could use it as a failure and just think, I'm not going to be good at this. This is rubbish. This is not going to lead to anything. Or you just look at it and say, right, okay, I might not use it now, but it might lead to something, you know, and I might use it later. And if you have that sort of like learning style or that sort of the way you learn and, you know, that creativity, that creative side of you, then you can become more creative. And then, you know, the world's your oyster. You can, you know, just carry on and just do great things.
That's always how it's been, because if you just dwell on all your mistakes, you will never grow.
Yeah.
All of your mistakes, you use it as the learning curve.
Yeah.
There's always something to learn when something hasn't gone right. Sometimes it's painful to revisit it because it's like a bad experience. Like you had, for example, I can't tell you the amount of times that I've had bad performances, you know, like, you know, learning the piano and stuff like that, and just not putting in my best, being nervous and, you know, having these kind of like, what do you call it? Your mind just goes blank and you hit the wrong note. You're like, you want to dwell on it and you want to cry and you want to be like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. But then you learn, you have to mask those things. So then when you hit that wrong note and you want to cry, no, just mask it, like, carry on, you know, don't stop, because stopping sometimes is the worst. It's almost like you've died. carry on, and there's certain techniques that you can do to help you sort of you know, go back into the flow of the piece that you're playing. And there is always something to be gained from mistakes, and never ever be frightened of showing people these sort of like work in progresses, because sometimes fresh eyes can pick up things that you haven't maybe noticed, because when you look at a make for too long, you ignore it. So that's why sometimes when you give it to your best mate or something like that, and you'll say, what do you think about this? Do you think that it looks off somewhere? And then they'll be like, actually, yes, it does, this bit. And then they'll point it out to you because they're looking at it with fresh eyes.
You've been looking at it
for something might be off, but you've been looking at it for so long that it looks right to you. Because your brain has just it's just kind of forgotten about it. But no, actually, fresh eyes is a real help.
Yeah. And it could be your own fresh eyes. Like you say, you put a painting down or you put a piece of art down or whatever. You put it down for 6 months, you come back to it, and those are your fresh eyes.
Instantly I rotate my canvases, because my canvases, they have no orientation, not truly anyway. While I'm working on it, I turn them, you know, 360 degrees. It doesn't matter to me what way it's up. It's just as everything, when everything looks cohesive and kind of everything coalesces sort of like beautifully in my opinion, it doesn't really matter if it's portrait or landscape or whichever way. But I rotate the painting because all four ways need to be beautiful, if you get what I mean. When all four ways looks beautiful, it's like you've hit the golden ratio. It's like everything, no matter what way it's up, it will be beautiful. And who does not want art to be beautiful at the end of the day? I surely do. That's a technique that I use as well.
Okay cool. And the other thing was, in terms of creativity, and I think we spoke about this as well, was the education system, and, you know, sort of like rote learning, and focusing on the arts and the sciences, and, you know, the art and the creativity side of the schools. Let me start again. Right, so in education, they're spending more time and resources on sort of like the maths, the English and the sciences, and kind of less on the art. What's your view on that?
I've always said that I think that that's a very bad idea. I think that that does a disservice to young people's minds, who are always so open and always so willing to take on new things and take on new challenges. And it's when you're young, when you're finding your way through life, that you have the most enthusiasm to, you know, pick up these things that you never thought, you know, you'd ever be able to experience in your lives. Like, you know, when I was at school, I, you know, who would have thought that by, you know, doing something in clay would make me so inspired to then, you know, do all of this other sort of artwork that came afterwards, you know. And that clay, we were given that in primary school. We were given, we were shown all of these kind of really hands-on stuff when we were super young, and it's such a shame to rip that from a young person's education, because that's where, when your brain is a sponge and it absorbs all of these new feelings and experiences, and it inspires you to then maybe progress from that to say, okay, well, I really, really liked doing puzzles when I was younger. So now I really want to like become a mechanic, because it's like putting things back together again, all that kind of stuff. One leads onto the other. And that in itself is creative, because you're not just regurgitating things, because regurgitation, you know, copying is not creative. It's allowing the person to have that kind of like hands-on experience, making the mistakes, getting dirty, you know, having these new sensations that they have to kind of maneuver. That is where a person's mind grows, and that's when they become you know, the future engineers, the future scientists, the future graphic designers. All of these professions, they need to have that creativity, because otherwise you'll get a society when everyone's just doing what the other person's doing, and that does not inspire innovation. You know, no one ever got to you know, the touch screens that we have now on everyone's, that everyone sort of uses now, and that we kind of take for granted. We would not have got there had we have not gone through so many phases of technology. And technology is moving at, in quantum leaps. I mean, we don't even in 20 years time, we don't even know where we're going to go. I mean, to get to smartphones, it took about 15 years to go from, you know, the Nokia brick phones that we kind of take the piss out of to the touch screens, the very sort of elegant sort of pieces of technology that are like mini computers in our pockets. It is amazing. It blows my mind. And it's so powerful that we have these things. I mean, people have literally made businesses on just their smartphones.
Yeah.
They didn't need a laptop. They didn't need a course or whatever. They could, everything was at their disposal on their phone. And I think that that is incredibly powerful, but you need the minds to get there. You need the minds to make these things. You can't just have everything so rigid, everything so cut and dry. You have to have these kind of people who they can see things, they can see gaps in these pieces of technology, for example. They can see gaps in the way that cars work. And then they can tweak things, and then they can say, well, what if we did them like this? Or what if we designed it in this way? You know, you have that happens when you have that, when you have the trial and error of having done these things in the past, of having made these mistakes and knowing what works and what doesn't.
I totally agree. And, you know, you've mentioned these words, you know, before, growth, you know, time to sort of like fail and learn. And also, as I said, you just mentioned innovation as well, which, like you say, without creativity, there is no innovation, and we'll just be standing still.
Exactly. I mean, my mind is completely blown by what is potentially, you know, what's to come in the future. I mean, I remember there was these quite a long time ago, I saw these videos of what the Victorians envisaged, you know, like what the year 2000 would look like. And they had people in, like, you know, individual helicopters that, you know, you cycle it with your feet. And they were all still dressed in Victorian clothing and top hats and stuff like that. And the women, no women had trousers on. They didn't envisage that the women would be wearing trousers, let alone all the other things that we, you know, people wear now. Boots, miniskirts, and all this kind of thing. No one could have dreamed those things. So they were sort of, they were very much stuck in their era. So in the short space of time that we have, sort of in a blink of an eye that we've sort of been on this earth, we just think, what is to come? What could there be? All of that is so exciting. And I almost want to sort of like, I don't want to jump in time, but I'm always conscious about time. I'm always conscious that I want to do so many things and I want to accomplish so many things, but there is literally not enough time in the day for all of these things to be done. And I always just think, like, you know, if I did something, you know, if I did one particular thing all day, every day for the next 20 years, what could I produce? How much can I sort of churn, how much can I get out of me, you know, and how many paintings will I feel, how many canvases will I feel, how many people, how many eyes will see it, you know, how many gallery spaces will I get, you know, all of those things. I always think about that kind of stuff. And time is a factor, big factor. And just thinking about, you know, what could be, is very exciting. I think that also inspires, because you don't want to stay stagnant, you don't want to just be like, well, this is it for me kind of thing. You know, I'm still young. I have so many, I have so much sort of generosity that I want to get out of me and to give to people.
Yeah.
And I just relish the, you know, whatever the future holds for me to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, and on that note, really, I mean, I think me and you are kind of the same. We want to be able to, I don't know, give people opportunity. Like, you know, you went to the art centre and, you know, you put yourself into a space where people could see you and people could talk to you. And, you know, you might have inspired someone. It's the same with my juggling and, you know, learning the Rubik's Cube. It's just giving people that opportunity to just do something different, because technology is really making us just look at screens and not being out there, not being tactile, not being, you know, speaking to other people, learning to play, learning to, you know, that most, like you say, with the art and the music and the juggling and whatever other pursuits that you do, you will fail, you will learn. And, you know, that's the only way that you can grow. You can't grow without failing. It's just, I think it's just impossible.
It really, really is. And it doesn't show you who you are as a person either. But sometimes the greatest things that you achieve are when the most pressure is on you. Someone could set you an unbelievable deadline, or you have to do this thing in 72 hours, and you think, oh my god, that's impossible. But you know, there's this famous saying, it's not impossible until it's done. I think that's a Nelson Mandela quote. That is so true. You don't know if something is impossible until it's been done. And then once you do it, then it's like, oh, you've just, you know, almost like you've conquered the mountain. But you've only conquered the mountain that you set for yourself, you know. So all of these challenges, you know, everyone will face challenges in their life, and it's also, you know, how well you deal with them, it determines, you know, whether you have a positive or a negative outcome. And you know, being able to solve problems, you know, by being creative and slightly thinking outside the box, it can really help you. It can help people sort of progress in, like, if they have a particularly dark part of their if they're in their lives that they're going through, you know, even just taking up an instrument because you saw someone busking or something, and think, oh, you know, maybe I want to play the guitar as well. And then you go to a sort of like a charity shop and you go and buy a secondhand guitar and you just sort of have a few strums and you're thinking, oh wow, you know, I'm not like Jimi Hendrix, but like I really really like you know, this sound, this music that I'm playing, I really like it. I'm able to play, you know, all the songs that I like. That's all it is. And it's just like a personal it's like the food for your soul. It's the stuff that you want to feed yourself that will make you a better person. I really do feel that doing things that I do, it fills in that gap. It fills in that part of me that I never would have thought I could achieve had I not have just been given the resources and really known for myself that this is truly what I want to do.
Yeah, no, you're like me as well. You know, some of the things that I take up and stuff like that are really creative, and it just, I don't know, it just kind of helps me get through the day, and it just feels like I'm achieving more than I would if I didn't have these things in my life, you know, being creative, you know, because I play music, I've learned an instrument as well, you know, I do quite a lot of sport and stuff like that. And it's just, yeah. and all these activities that I do need creativity in order to me to get the most out of it. And I think you're right, just try and getting people to, even if it's just knitting, something that is, you know, that is different from just...
I mean, I say, hey man, I say washing up is creative, you know, even the most basic sort of chores, people think of it as chores, they can be creative as well. It's just how you do them. It's having had the experience and growing from it and being like, well, actually I can, you know, I can clean these dishes in this way and it'll get the job done faster. And it makes you more efficient. And it makes the job, I suppose, a little bit more fun. It also gets the job done quicker, so you've got time to do other things.
Yeah.
Because who wouldn't want to, like, have more time to do what you enjoy? So
I still think people need to think about making more time, because I think you know, I mean, I call the Netflix and all these other streaming services, I call them the black hole, because once you enter it, it's kind of hard to get out. So
I'm a bit guilty of that as well, I have to admit. I'm a bit guilty of that, but we have so much
time,
we have so much power at our disposal, and sometimes people, they absorb, you know, they are taking in everything, and that's absolutely fine. You know, you're absorbing all of this wealth of, like, all of these directors that have, like, made your favorite TV programs, and then these artists who have made your favorite albums, and you're just listening to all of their hard rock, getting a real fulfillment out of them. But then there's also comes a time where you feel so inspired by all of that sort of creative generosity from others that you feel like you now want to sort of take the reins and you want to do it for yourself, and you go to a gallery. Every time I go to an art gallery, I always feel inspired when I go home just to paint something, even if it's just something very small, or something that's taken me an hour. It always gives me kind of that buzz of, like, I was there, I experienced it, now I want to put my pen to paper, or in this case brush to canvas,
and
do my version of whatever I saw. Like, I think that it's so important to embrace this, because it's something that, you know, our hands might fail us when we get older. This is maybe the only time that you have, you know, some people they have, you know, God forbid they'll get Parkinson's, or they, you know, you have nerve issues and stuff like that. God forbid someone loses an arm. I mean, that is, you know, I'm talking about the worst of the worst situations, but, you know, sometimes you need to have that kind of, like, feeling that you want to accomplish something before everything gives out.
Yeah, do something now before it's too late, sort of thing. Exactly. Yeah.
Put it off tomorrow if you can do it today. I always think about that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'd say, I just wanted to find out. I mean, I say, just to let everyone know, all Hemtep's social media stuff and information, I'll put it all into the show notes. So if you ever want to go and you know, see some of her great art, then it will all be in there. So what's the kind of future for you? Where do you see yourself?
So I'm currently working on a big project where I actually started it before COVID. So paintings for seven pieces of music that I've posed. So there'll be seven piano pieces for seven very large paintings, and it'll be like a concert where I each piece, I don't know how long they'll be, but they're about a song's length, so maybe between like 4 to 7 minutes, and then they'll have an accompanying artwork that goes with it, so you'll see the imagery that I'm seeing when I composed a piece of music. So that's the project I'm currently working on. It's taking a little bit longer than I expected because of the pandemic and everything, but that's sort of like the big thing that I have going at the moment. And I don't know when I'm going to finish it, but it's what I'm sort of putting my heart and soul into at the moment. So hopefully when it's all done, I'll obviously let you know, and I might even perform it at, you know, at the Dugdale it's like, you know, come full circle.
Please tell me about it, and, the, you know, we could even, you know, have a follow-up podcast whenever it is. Obviously, there's no pressure because I know these things, you know, you just can't snap your finger and say, right, it's going to be March of 20, whatever. I know how these things work.
Sometimes I want to set these very, very aggressive deadlines, but I don't know if I'll be able to fulfill them. But you know, sometimes deadlines are good, but I don't know if it'll be done this year. This is I'll work on it obviously, and I'll try to complete everything by, say, you know, December 31st. But in terms of, because then I write the pieces of music and then I have to play them, so I have to learn my own pieces I've composed, which is it's another discipline.
Yeah, of course.
And then I have to paint the artworks, and the canvases are huge. They're like five foot. You know, large canvas.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
So yeah, they're like a person's length tall, and they might look really big to me right now, but on the stage they'll probably look quite small. But that's feasibly what I could do, like in the space that I have. So, and hopefully there'll be like really eye-catching images, and the pieces will be, you know, very, very beautiful. Like, it's really hard to explain without.
No, I understand. I tell you what, I really commend you for doing this, because this sounds huge, you know, a big undertaking for me. That's what it sounds like.
It's been something that I've been cooking for a while, and I just haven't really told anybody about it, or like maybe only my sort of family. But I feel like if I tell people, then I'm obligated to do it. So it's a little bit of a, gives me that push. So I have to do it.
Yeah.
So I can't go back on my word now. But I'm quite far into it. I'm more than halfway into it. So it is the commitment is there, and it's just COVID kind of, it took the wind out of the sails a little bit, because I had to do other things, because no one was having any productions. There were no cinemas and theatres, you know. So but now everything's kind of relatively gone back to normal. I will obviously continue to pursue that, and you'll probably hear about me in the future. I'll definitely tell you when it's sort of ready to
for sure.
And there'll be like tickets available and box office stuff from the actual center itself. So that's the what's happening in the future, and I'll probably still do artwork. Well, I'm sure I will do artworks, like smaller artworks here and there, just to give myself a new kind of fresh look on something else. I feel like I need to get away from the big projects and do the smaller canvases. Sometimes it's necessary, but I'll probably still be doing that as well. But yeah, so that's the big project, and I hope that it's successful and I can take it to other venues and maybe get other podcasts and other interviews and stuff like that, and I can just, you know, carry on just giving all of this sort of like vibrant and colorful and attractive food for thought artwork and music to people, and you know, it can be a great experience for them as much as it is for me.
No, I mean, personally, I mean, I think you'll do well. And the reason why I say that, because I sort of like gravitated to when we started talking, because you were actually out there, you know, at the Dugdale, at the Art Centre, and, you know, you were putting yourself out there. And I don't think many artists kind of do that. Like I said, it's quite a solitary pursuit, and for you to put yourself out there, I think it was good for you, for yourself, wasn't it? And it was good for the people around you, seeing someone doing something like that, which is unusual for people.
I never thought I'd enjoy it so much. It was really such a new and different and great experience for me. And I even asked him afterwards, I said, could I sort of come back and do some more? And the people who were working there were like, just come, you know, it's fine, just, you know. But that I had to get managerial's approval.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm still waiting to hear from them. But regardless, I made myself available, and I think sometimes that's how the opportunities come here, because I wouldn't have met you otherwise.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have been here. So all of these things come in sometimes in ways that you at least expect it. But sometimes that's a really sort of like healthy way to realize that there are people who are they're thirsty for this kind of stuff. They've never seen it. It's like it could be the apple of somebody's eye that day, that they just saw something in you that just sparked something inside them, and then now they've gone and acted on it by going home and decided they wanted to pick up a paintbrush, or they wanted to listen to a piece of music and get inspired about what they see. Maybe they wouldn't even found out there that they had synesthesia like me, you know,
kind of
a knock-on like domino effects, that you know, one thing can affect another person and can affect another person. It just goes and on, and it's like a train of inspiration. And I feel sometimes people need that.
Oh, no, for sure. I'll tell you what, it was really great meeting you. I'll tell you what, I mean, just meeting you has changed the way I think about things. It's changed my life because there's just certain things that I think about now based on our conversation. And obviously, I've got you onto the podcast now. So, you've changed my trajectory because, I wouldn't have, if I hadn't met you, we wouldn't be talking about art. And it's something that I've always wanted to talk about on my podcast in depth like this. And you've given me the opportunity, and I just hope some of the viewers, not viewers, some of the audience actually listens to it. And if they only take away one thing, that's all we can do in this world,
Exactly. Just, sometimes they say, we all gonna die, but the some things we are they live forever. In this case, when I'm dead and gone, my artwork will still be, in somebody's home or in a some on a wall somewhere, and it will still be looked at and admired. And that's all I can hope for, really. That's where I'll live forever.
And then, to be honest, that's the reason why I do this podcast, because it will be out there in the in the interweb or internet, out there for people to listen to in hundreds of years, so that's the
Forever.
reason why I that was one of the main reasons why I did do a podcast, so I can just put it out there and for people to listen to whenever. So yeah, it's kind of a
Great platform.
win-win. Yeah, it is. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I really, really
Thanks
enjoyed
for having
the,
me.
yeah, really enjoyed the conversation, and really good luck with your future plans and everything like that. And
Thank
hopefully
you
we'll
so
get you
much.
back in the future.
Oh, that I would love to. Should I
Brilliant.
give my socials and all that? Well, I
Yeah,
reckon you
yeah.
do.
Well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I'll what I'll do is you give me the socials, WhatsApp to me later, and then I will put it into the show notes. Yeah,
Sure, no
or
problem.
send me the email, I'll put it into the show notes. Yeah.
Okay,
Yeah.
no problem. But
Yeah.
anyway, thank you so much for this opportunity, and it was lovely to speak to you.
No, and thanks for coming on the show. Brilliant.
Oh, no problem.
Okay, let's
Take
have a look.
care.
Just, yeah, hold on.